This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Ta-da! That's me. And good morning, everybody. I always want to thank you for taking time to listen to the program. Here's one that I'm going to find quite helpful, being the gentleman who can't ever seem to hang in a relationship long enough to get married and who lives away from his family. Let's talk about relationships with two licensed counselors.
And support for WNRN today comes from the markets of Tiger Fuel Company, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street.
For the Thomas Jefferson Health District, inviting you to kick the smoking habit. The Charlottesville Free Clinic is starting its spring series of support group sessions of Quit Smoking Charlottesville. The sessions are open to the entire community in a friendly and supportive group setting. There will be a wide range of informative speakers and no advance registration needed. The sessions are free to all community residents and happen every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. beginning February 7th through late April. All sessions happen at the Charlottesville Albemarle Health Department on Rose Hill Drive. For more information, please visit us online at sevillefreeclinic.org. I'm Julia Wanch, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
All right, back in action here. Sorry for those listeners as we play along and see what happens here. I've done all I can do, or I've done much of what I can do to test these microphones. So we'll fire up again. Kara, you've been involved for 20 years?
That's correct.
And what made you choose that profession?
Oh, well, most of it feels like it was synchronous, and I fell right into it in a way. I had come out of college looking at teaching and coaching and went into grad school looking at working on college campuses. And in my experience in my grad school program, had a wonderful opportunity to work with a lot of different people and saw that I really just loved doing work in a counseling way. So that's how I got there, and I've been there ever since.
And Walter, we're going to check yours and see what your microphone says now. How did you get involved in the profession?
Well, I'd been a school teacher, and about 1984, I'd been building my house in the summertime, and it was good enough to live in, and I realized I was very, very tired of grading papers. And so I'd been interested in, especially in the kids who were having trouble with their families. Often kids who were having trouble in school were having trouble with their families as well. So I took all the classes I could find in family therapy, and became licensed in 1990, but I've been doing therapy in one way or another since 1986.
So when I do, you know, my conversation about relationships and do my studies about relationships, our guests today, again, Kara Marinucci and Walter Marin here in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area, licensed professional counselors, to me there's two types. So correct me if I'm wrong. There's the intimate relationships, and then there are family relationships. Are there more than that? And what are the differences between the two?
Well, I would add some, because we have relationships wherever we go, even if they're temporary. But we definitely have friendships, and we have work relationships. And sometimes these relationships overlap, and sometimes they're distinct to our workplace or to certain types of friends and levels of friendship, as well as family members, and as well as those intimate relationships you talked about.
But do people come and receive counseling for those types? Or do you just make your own decisions on that and say, that works, that doesn't work, here's what I'm going to try, et cetera?
They do have a lot in common, and people come often for one of those particular things, but often there's spillover if a person is feeling a lack of support in one area, often that creates problems in another. For instance, if you're having a hard time at work and the boss is mad with you, it's awfully easy to go home and be mad with your kids or with your wife or something like that. So often there's a connection between the different areas of your relationships.
All right, again, 979-0919. We'll take some calls in a few minutes. You know, the reason that I wanted to put the show together today is obviously that Valentine's Day is upcoming. And regardless of how great that you may feel your relationship is, there are no perfect relationships, are there?
We're always a work in progress. That's sort of my motto. And people are always learning new things about themselves and about each other. So it would be hard. People might have moments of perfection or moments that they really resonate with another person, but then they have to re-engage again at another point and rediscover that connection again.
There's also a balance that is going on all the time in us. I call it the balance between protection and connection. On one hand, we long to be connected and feel safe and secure in some kind of group, family, intimate relationship, whatever. But we also have this need for protection, to feel like we can protect ourselves if we feel like somebody's mad with us or upset with us, and then we kind of pull back from those connection relationships.
Well, let me ask, what are the most, you know, the number one reason that people come to see either of you? Cara?
Well, having to do with relationships, it usually does have to do with those intimate relationships, whether married or not, but having significant conflict or difficulty, wondering if the relationship should continue, trying to figure out how to make it work. Those are the types of phrases people often use.
So that sounds more like the intimate than the family relationship.
Though people often come, we get EAP, Employee Assistance Program people, who have had trouble with relationships at the workspace, mm-hmm. too, mm-hmm. that bring them to see you as well. But often those folks are having trouble with their intimate relationships, too. There are a series of skills, really, that are involved in relationships.
And the most common, I was just going to say, the most common family relationship reason why people come in is having to do with parenting. Usually having difficulty in figuring out how to work with their children or teenagers and making, or blended families, when two people come together and there's already kids from one or both folks, blending the families and having responsibilities of step-parenting. Those are other types of relationship issues that can come up that are more family-oriented.
Often with couples, the issue that presents is we can't communicate. We're arguing all the time. We love each other, but somehow it used to be good, and now it's gotten off track. And no matter how hard we try, we don't know how to get it back working properly again. And so people get frustrated and angry and depressed.
Now, again, our guest today, Walter Marin, Cara Marinucci, as we talk about relationships, and both of our guests are licensed professional counselors. So we'll open up the phone lines in just a few minutes. 979-0919, 877-WNRN-ROCKS. You can also send me a question through the WNRN internet messaging if you have a question that way. You know, doing my homework, I love this. Cara, you sent me a 10-minute video to watch, I guess, of someone who had given a speech in front of fellow licensed counselors. Walter, you gave me a long list of things from heart work.
I call what I do heart work.
Heart work. Mm-hmm. And so doing a bunch of other work, other research, I found all these questions. I mean, the world is full of questions about relationships. Mm-hmm. I found it to be intriguing, but also somewhat frightening to see whether or not you as a person experience this, and there are questions that seem similar. And some of it was, goodness, do I need to worry about that? And so I pulled one out, and I'm going to start with this. Apparently this is an emotional, intimate relationship. And it seems to me, I would say, as someone who's not a licensed professional counselor, that this would be somewhat normal. At some point in the life, all relationships would go through this moment. Good morning. I heard your sarcasm. Well, my oh my, aren't we bright and cheery? Why can't you start off the day without looking for a fight? And I took the sex types out of each one and says, because of the emotional pressure between them, one misinterprets the greeting as sarcastic, the other's feelings get hurt, and gives what is accused of sarcasm. The pain between them continues unabated. I want to start. Who wants to jump into that? And is it fair to say that many, if not all, relationships experience something similar to that? And what would be your conversation with the partners?
There's a deal that we make, I think all of us make, who want to hold on to a long-term relationship. And here's the deal. We say to each other in one way or another, I'll take care of you, you take care of me, we take care of each other. That's the deal. And when you're in that deal, you're in this connected mode with someone, and it feels great, and you're in love, and it's wonderful. Unfortunately, things happen. Disagreements, hurt feelings, whatever. And you suddenly have this feeling of, wait a minute, you've broken the deal. You're not taking care of me. And as soon as you reach that point, you go into self-protection mode. And you're suspicious of the other person, and you can't talk about things because if you do, you get in a fight. And then that thing you were talking about, emotional pressure, starts building. And when it does, we start misinterpreting what we hear. We project on the other person through this pressure of what we think they're talking about. So the trick as a counselor is to find ways to reduce that pressure, to help people relax and feel heard and understood so that they can move back into a connected, safe, secure mode.
Cara?
I would agree with Walter, and I would just add that it's very helpful to remember that we all come into our relationships with experiences from our families and from other people, and it's very easy to get triggered into places that we have felt hurt before. And it's also easy to do things to trigger somebody. In other words, being critical of somebody because we expect that will help them change the ways we think they need to change. That's a common thing, is I think you need to do this differently, and so I'm going to help you do that. And usually the person doesn't really want that sort of help. They would like you to appreciate them for the way they are. And so this is the exchange that happens back and forth, is can we see each other for who we really are right now, while acknowledging that we're both growing, without some of that criticism or defensiveness. They're two of the qualities that often can lead people in intimate relationships to being in high conflict, which is feeling criticized or being very critical of the other. And on the other hand, being defensive, not, for instance, the example you gave, being able to sort of look at the person and say, can I make sure that we're on the same page here? You know, because that felt like that was very critical to me. And I know I'm using very counselor-like language, but saying, hey, what's going on? Is everything okay here? And checking in with the other person.
I've heard from friends who who do see counselors, whether it's for family, intimate, or even personal concerns. Everyone should see a counselor. At some point in your life, everyone can benefit from seeing a counselor. And I don't know that I believe that. And I know that there are friends and family members of mine who haven't seen counselors. And I realize I'm asking people whose career benefits both, I would assume personally and certainly financially, from people choosing to see a counselor. Do you agree with that? That everyone will benefit at some time in life from seeing a counselor?
I always get uncomfortable with this all or nothing kind of everybody should. But I think of seeing a counselor as a little bit like looking into a mirror. We grow up with a whole set of habits, of ways of operating, and we typically don't really question those or aware of those unless we run into some kind of problem. And the ones that are working well for us are great. But I think what happens with a counselor is that when you bring up things that are going on, that counselor helps you look at where you're at, what you're doing, and how that affects those around you. Mm-hmm. And allows you to make some changes. It's pretty hard to shave in the morning if you can't look in a mirror and see what you're doing. So it gives you the ability to look at and make choices. We don't just say, hey, you need to do this and not that, and you need to do it our way. But we try to help you look at what's working for you and what's getting in your way and change the pieces that are getting in your way.
And relationships are one of those areas that it's common for people to even just get some short-term counseling for in a way that's both intervention, in other words, I know something's not going the way I'd like it, but also more preventative, for instance, premarital counseling. So you can look at that there are ways, or when families are blending, to sort of look at how is that going to happen in the most positive way for all the family members. So I do think there are opportunities that anybody can take advantage of. But like Walter, I wouldn't say that everyone wants to do that or needs to do it, and it's each person's choice. But certainly it's a positive preventative thing, as well as sometimes most people think of it as more when something's wrong.
One other thought on that is that I think sometimes people feel like if you go to counseling, this is going to be kind of some kind of interminable psychoanalysis. It's going to last for the rest of your life. And it doesn't have to be that at all. Often people come to see me for, you know, 3 or 4 sessions, really. And they, oh, now I have what I need. Thanks. I appreciate the insight and the support. And then they're able to make the changes they need to make.
11:18 here on the Wake Up Call. We are talking about relationships. We'll open up the phone lines now if you'd like. 979-0919 877-WNRN-ROCKS. And the instant message site, if you want to send me something via computer, it's WNRN Studio. 11:18 here on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And support for WNRN brought to you today by Atlantic Organic Natural Sleep Shop, featuring their natural and chemical-free organic sleep studio with environmentally conscious mattresses and bedding, including eco-friendly hardwood platform beds. That's Atlantic Organic, 421 West Main Street in Charlottesville. The website, AtlanticOrganicSleepShop.com. It's bedtime, naturally. Again, back to our guests, Walter Marion and Cara Marinucci. Call up if you have a question, 979-0919-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Oh, let's see, I got one of those instant message questions. All right, let me see. My boyfriend is a great gift giver, and with Valentine's Day upcoming, I'm worried. I never give as great a gift, and while he never says anything, I think both of us are disappointed at my inability to give as good a gift. How do I solve this problem?
Well, I think that there is a gift that's greater than the gift of giving presents. And I think it's best to start with that one, which is the gift of seeking to share how you're feeling and how your partner, or your boyfriend in this case, is feeling about your relationship. A way you could do that is to say to him, I'm concerned that you're not as happy about my gift that I've given you, and I want to give you what you need and let you know how much I care about you. And then have that conversation about what he needs. It may be that he really just needs to have your connection with him. That's what's important. And his fancy gift is him letting you know how much he appreciates you. And, you know, you may be giving things to him that you're unaware of.
That's Walter Marion. He's one of the professional counselors in the room today. We also have Kara Marinucci. Kara, so what if that's a little white lie? Are there, you know, at what point is there, or is there ever a time that's appropriate or acceptable to tell a little white lie? The boyfriend thinks that that's only going to create a greater problem. Maybe he doesn't feel that's an issue. His joy comes from giving the gift.
Right.
And she's the one who assumes that he must not be as happy with what she considers to be her lesser skill at giving gifts.
I think you're bringing up a lot of good questions in how you're presenting the question.
Well, we have
40
more minutes. Keep going.
And what I would sort of
And I'm not paying for this, by the way. There's no insurance fee at the end of the hour.
Nope, none. And we just, as Walter was talking about, some of this might be around the communication that they need to have. And I guess one perspective I would put out there is also looking at that we all have different ways we feel loved and that we want to show love. And it's not the same for everybody. So sometimes this can come up in relationships as I do really like to give gifts. That's a way that I can show my love. And I might expect that from the other person. And when they don't do it as well as I do it, I feel disappointed. So that would be maybe accurate if the boyfriend's disappointed. On the other hand, he may not expect to get it that way. He might be quite comfortable with her best gift is maybe how she takes care of him or how she looks out for organizing things or maybe plans their social calendar. There's many ways people can show love, affection, physical intimacy. And so one of the differences that can become a conflict in a relationship is this not understanding. We might have some differences in how we give and receive love, what our preferences are, and how do we meet each other in those differences.
Let's talk for a minute, because the phrase that popped into my head while you're giving that answer is red flag. Are there, let's talk for a minute about red flags, and how does, whether it's a family member, because it would seem to me that this is irregardless of whether it's a family or an intimate problem, how do you determine that there is an honest or true red flag versus one that you are blowing up into a problem that's not there, or mm-hmm. creating the red flag that doesn't truly exist?
Again, I think about the term when you read that little thing about sarcasm and so on earlier. You're looking at something I call emotional pressure, which is this tension between two people who aren't real clear about who the other person really is. You know, is this just a little white lie? You know, if he says everything's fine, is it really fine? You need to have a conversation around those issues. And one thing people do that really doesn't work very well if there is distance is ask questions. Is something wrong? Do you really like this? You know, am I doing enough? All those are questions, and often they bring forth some kind of response of, sure, everything's fine. You know, everything's great. And the person says, oh, no, it's not really. You know, I don't know if I could believe him or not. What works a lot better is to make a guess. I'm thinking maybe my present isn't really what you wanted. It's not as, you know, you've put so much effort into yours for me. I'm guessing maybe mine isn't really what you were hoping for. So the nice thing about making guesses is that it lets the other person know that it's okay for that to be a possibility, that you respect their feelings. It also allows them to either agree or correct you. And the fact is that none of us like anything much better than to correct somebody else who has it wrong. So you'd be much more likely to say, no, you didn't have that quite right. Actually, I'm feeling more this way. And so it opens that conversation up.
Is the stereotype true that females are more likely to want to initiate and carry on this conversation than males?
I think mostly, but it's not always true. There are certainly some very sensitive males who and they tend to be attracted to women who are, you know, less so. There's always this kind of complementarity around how people express themselves.
Is it typical that at least regardless of the gender, the sex, that one person is more likely to want to carry on the conversation than the other? And so then how do you get the other to meet you and become involved in what you want to talk about?
I think you're hitting on something that I see very often in working with couples or even an individual who's talking primarily about relationship. And that is that people generally in their relationships, regardless of what their natural preference is within the relationship, they will have one person who's more apt to be what you call the initiator or pursuer. That's the person who's most likely to engage. Then the other person is more likely to want some space or distance, particularly emotionally. It doesn't mean that they always want to be distant, but there can become a pattern where all of a sudden one person's doing predominantly the engaging and the other person is always looking for that distance for some safety. And when that happens, it can become more difficult. When it works is when both people can find some balance, even if one is still doing the majority of engaging and the other person's doing a majority of finding some space, because individuals need both of those things in their relationship.
Is there any concern? All right, I'm sure that it's there, so I'm not going to say, is there any? Let's talk about finger pointing rather than acceptance. And I know that that's not always the case with every relationship, but it's existing out there. So as two therapists and me with my horrible ability at accepting the problem that I bring to the relationship, and so I'm always shouting back and finger pointing, what do I need to do? Or do you work more with the person who is suffering from my finger pointing?
Again, I said earlier that a relationship is something that's a balance between a person's need for protection and its need for connection. And when somebody is busily finger pointing, they are in protection mode. They are trying to protect themselves. They don't want to feel bad. It's easier to try to make the other person feel bad. So again, if you go back to this sense of reducing pressure, if you just let that be pressure between the two people holding them apart instead of one person carrying all of this load, you can deal with that by making a guess across that. So if one person points their finger at the other person, it's apt to make the other person go into protection mode too, right? You're pointing your finger at me, I have to protect myself. If instead the person who's having the finger pointed at them can take a deep breath, relax, and say, okay, how is my partner feeling about me right now if they're pointing their finger and they're angry? And if they can say, it sounds like you're angry at me because you think I did this thing and it really hurt you. All of a sudden, the person who's pointing the finger has to take a look at themselves and say, is that what's going on, that I'm all mad and I'm pointing my finger? And that makes them focus on themselves instead of busily focusing their partner as the object of their pain. And they calm down.
But you don't pay any attention to anything. You're not even close. Why would you say that? That's not the problem at all.
So you're frustrated with me that I'm not hearing you and I don't really care about your point of view. It's really hard for you to have to deal with me.
You're so smooth.
One of the things I'll often say to folks because part of what we're doing is we're looking at the individual's responsibility to deal with their own feelings, which I think is something that most people are still looking at. How can I know that I'm angry and express it in a way that's helpful and not blow up, or know that I'm hurt and disappointed and feel an appropriate way to express that actually helps? One of the things I'll often say is, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Because I think often in the conflicts that people have where they're bringing in a lot of righteousness and contempt and even name-calling and blaming and feeling superior, is they're all caught up in somehow substantiating that they're right, that there's something, there's this right or wrong, that they're in a competition. And this is the person they've decided to be most intimate with, and they've got this competition going. So do they want to be right or do they want to be happy? And that doesn't mean they give up having a conversation, but they need a conversation rather than a conflict. Because where relationships can be most help, we've talked a lot lot about some of the things where they can go wrong. But where they can really be helped is when people are engaging much more positively with each other. And it's not that we have conflicts. We're going to have them. But it's how we repair those conflicts that matter.
I liked your point about whether to be right or be happy. And that goes back to that protection mode versus connection mode. If you're in self-protection mode, you feel the need to be right, to win. And you don't really care who loses in the process. Unfortunately, when you're there, no matter how much you prove you're right, you're making your partner wrong. And then your partner doesn't like being wrong much, so they're going to be looking for some way to be right next. So there's this constant state of turmoil with two people each trying to be right at the expense of the other. And you waste an awful lot of energy there. It's exhausting, and you can't put your energy to work having a good time or making progress in the world. So to move into that connection mode of relaxing and hearing each other means suffering. It means actually putting your own reaction on hold for a little bit. You don't have to do it forever, but while you pay attention to how your partner might be feeling, reaching across to your partner and trying to understand their point of view allows you to calm them down. Then they calm you down in return, and you can move into a safer, more secure, connected space.
11:33 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guests today, Cara Marinucci, Walter Marion, both local licensed professional counselors here in our Charlottesville, Albemarle area. You can call up with your question or comment if you'd like, 979-0919. 877-WNRN-ROCKS. You can also send me that instant message at WNRN Studio.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And today's programming supported by Jefferson Theater, presenting Old 97s and the Too Far to Care 15th Anniversary Tour with the Travoltas, and a solo set by Rhett Miller. That's Thursday, February 14th. Valentine's celebrations, including tickets to the Old 97s, chocolate, hotel, and shuttle are available. Tickets for the February 14th show, jeffersontheater.com. All right, back to our guests, Walter Marion, Cara Marinucci here. Let's talk for a minute about families, because there's a family instant message that popped up. Let me see. I worry about my mother dating again. Is it okay for me to talk with her about how times have changed? Who wants to jump on that?
My first thought is, well, so much depends on your relationship with your mother, what sort of open communication you've had in the past, and, you know, how she would receive that communication. So it's hard to just say yes or no, but if you feel like you have a really positive relationship, there probably are ways to engage with her, just to make sure that, you know, you can just share how you're wanting to make sure that she's thought about certain things that she might not have thought about.
What I would add is that even if you're not sure how she's going to react, if it's important to you, I think it is worth broaching the subject, you know, but do it from your own point of view, not that you should be telling her what to do, but much more talking about how you're feeling and what your concerns are. I'm worried about this guy you're seeing. You know, I'm not sure that he's going to be good for you. But then you need to be ready to hear her reaction and respond to it so that she knows that you're hearing her and not just lecturing her.
And she might be more ready than you realize. Again, we don't know the specific situation here, but often even adult children hold their parents in sort of this place of, you know, not even being fully human sexual beings in a way. And I don't know, I'm reading into the issue here, but I think that that would be a common concern for somebody who maybe has not been single in a long, long time is, what does it mean to be dating again? What are the rules of the road? How do I engage in doing that? And it is different than probably if it's been more than 20 years ago.
Cara, you said depends on the relationship between, you know, with them, with your mother. And what is there, what social skills does the child need to have some sort of professional background so that the mother would even pay attention to this? I mean, a 13-year-old might not be able to have this conversation, or could a 13-year-old bring up valid points for the mother to be concerned about, as opposed to a 30-year-old bringing up the conversation, so that the mother pays attention and feels like, oh, you know what? Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Or, yes, and thank you so much for bringing this up, because I was a little too embarrassed to go to you about it.
I think you still have a right to express your own feelings. So if I were a 13-year-old child who was worried about her mom or wondering how her mom is going to handle something, it seems like you could say to your mom, Mom, I've been thinking about, you know, you and this guy. I'm wondering, you know, I'm worried about this particular aspect of this relationship. I'm not sure that's going to be good for you or good for me. I'm 13, you know, I've got to deal with this guy too. But then be ready to hear mom's reactions.
Including, you know, I really appreciate your concern, but I really am not comfortable talking too much about this with you right now.
Thank you, Mom. I just wanted you to know what was going on with me. I appreciate that.
All right. We will take calls. You don't have to give your name and number. You're welcome to, you know, come on the air if you'd like. You be anonymous. You're welcome to pass the question along through Angie. She's here helping me today, such as this person. Let's see. Been in a relationship for 5 years and never had a big fight. Always talked out any small issue. Is this unusual and or bad? Many people find this odd.
I think it depends on the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling? Do you know how your partner's feeling? If some people are able to do that forever because one person turns into some kind of blob that always accommodates their partner. If you're both able to stand your ground and say what's on your mind and feel heard and understood, well, you may just be so good at expressing where you're coming from that you resolve things before they ever get out of control. On the other hand, if one of you is just stopping up things and sacrificing all for your partner, then sooner or later, probably something is going to blow or somebody's going to get pretty unhappy.
Why does it often seem to take? Now, certainly there are, again, I recognize that any of the conversations that we're having do not fit 100% of whatever group you're in, whether we're talking about the mother-daughter relationship, in this case, seemingly the partner's relationship. But seemingly, for the relationship to make it past that initial 3 to 6 months, the intimate relationships, once you get past that point, it seems to go years for many of my friends. And so why does it take years before you become unhappy, or at least show your unhappiness, to become disenchanted or have that emotional turmoil? Because you get married, and then, what is it, the seven-year itch? In this case, the partner calling about, been 5 years, okay, do I need to be worried about the big, what did they say? I can't find what phrase they used, but the big blow-up. Is that a fair question? Is that a concern that happens to more than just the rare number of people, where you make it through a certain length of time and then the problems happen?
I think we all grow through stages of growth and stagnation. And then we need to have some kind of rebirth. It's a little bit like peeling an onion. No matter how many layers you go down, there's always another layer below that one. So there are times, developmental crises, a change in lifestyle, or you think you know who your partner is and you stop communicating with your partner and you don't learn more about them as they grow, and so you tend to grow more distant. Again, if you can address that with your partner, you know, I'm getting really bored with you. It's not much fun anymore. I need to have more excitement than you're providing. Well, that's a challenge to your partner. Most people who reach that point don't say that or talk about that or feel heard as they do bring those things up. But if you bring that kind of uncomfortable stuff up with your partner, you are allowing new growth and new changes to occur in your relationship. And you can, find new directions and new ways of seeing each other.
Well, one of the things I would add is when we think about particularly the intimate relationships and the well-known experience of sort of the seven-year sort of time frame where people start experiencing some of those difficulties, part of it really is there truly is a honeymoon period. And to just tap in a little bit to understanding that when we bond with somebody, we don't just do that in an emotional way or a psychological way. It's actually happening in a physical way. So we're actually in our brains having these connections. It's called mirror neurons, and I'm not going to get too much into it, but we have to know that we're bonding with people so that we have this really high attachment that happens between us physically in our attractions and in the neurochemicals in our brain. And then what can happen over time, and it relates to what Walter was saying, is we can get very used to each other. And so we start expecting people to be the person we're with to be a certain way to help us feel the way we want to feel. And yet they expect the same from us, and yet we're both evolving human beings. So we have to keep re-engaging and having conversation again and again and enjoy that growth process. But there's a tendency for all human beings to want things to be the way they always were, where we feel safe and comfortable and what we think of as happy. So it's this ongoing tension. And it usually does happen in that time period. It happens over and over again in couples who have been together 20, 30, 40 years. There's time periods where they have to re-engage because they will often find themselves in a rut. And that rut is we go to work, we come home, we watch some TV, and we stop doing. Often another time period is when we have kids. So if a couple decides to have kids and they're certainly in that young period, they can go 3 or 4 years. When I see couples, I'll sometimes say, when's the last time you had a date? And it doesn't have to be really expensive. It can be taking a walk on the downtown mall. But doing something without the kids and having fun, just the two of you again. And that's the things that can be forgotten that can lead to a sense of lack of joy in seeing each other.
Well, other than solo time was what I took that to be, sort of to pick a word out of that, a date. What are other concerns that new parents need to be concerned about? I mean, because I'm certain, even as someone without any kids, that bringing children into the relationship bring about a dramatic change and bring up new potential problems and unspoken issues into the relationship.
Well, you know, part of it is when you say unspoken, how much have they talked about what they would think of as how they would want to parent? Some people have talked about that a lot, and some people, they think they understand where the other person is coming from, and then when they actually have a child, they see they have some real differences in how they expect to parent. In other words, what their philosophies are, what they would want to do in the case of discipline, what they expect the relationship to be with the grandparents, and how often they're going to involve extended family. There's many different issues that can come up, as well as just the stress. There's financial stress usually, even if you're in a position when you feel comfortable to take that on. There's a sense of what do we need to do. Somebody might actually feel more stress around what do we do with that? There can be some stress around, are we going to have one person be the primary caretaker of the child? And what does that mean? And how do we value that differently if they're stepping back from what's considered paid work? So there's lots of things. That's just a few that I can think of right now.
Something that goes right along with that is that your energy level changes. You've got a new person in the family who takes a lot of energy, and your old roles and your old habits may not work in this new situation. For example, some people are real party animals, and suddenly you have a kid, and somebody's got to take care of the kid, and you may have to change some of those habits. And you need to have a discussion about exactly how you're going to do that and who's going to be in charge of what and how do you share that, because you both may feel exhausted. If there's not enough energy to go around and take the kid, something's got to give, and you need to have a talk about that.
Our guest today, Walter Marion, Kara Marinucci, we're talking about relationships with two of Central Virginia's licensed professional counselors. And we're doing this at the support of Calvino Cafe, 408 West Main Street. At Calvino Cafe, you'll find breakfast egg paninis and flatbread wraps until 11 a.m., and Mediterranean flatbread wraps and pizza available from 11:30 until 3:30, along with smoothies, coffees, teas, and hot chocolate. The alternative to the breakfast bagel, Calvino Cafe, from the people who bring you orzo, always with parking in the Main Street Market. Does being married extend a relationship? Because, you know, there are people who are partners who are in a relationship, and a problem that comes up may be the problem that breaks the relationship. Would that same problem possibly force them to stay and work it out a little more if they were married?
It could. I think it does to some extent. It's awful easy if you don't have any responsibilities towards each other, then you happen to be sharing the rent for a while and you have a disagreement. It's pretty easy to just drop the situation and go. And certainly there's been research showing that the people who struggle with difficulties that they're having, if they hang in there and they keep on working at it, often they can work out a resolution. But it's other things besides marriage. People who share a house, you know, they bought a house together, whether they're married or not, and suddenly they decide to split. You know, that's a big issue. If they have kids, that's a big issue. So the more things you share in common, married or not, the more difficult it is to just leave the relationship, and the more sense it makes to invest in seeing if you can work out your differences.
Not much time left, 11:49 on the wake-up call. Thanks for listening. As we talk with our licensed professional counselors about relationships, still time for you to call up or send me an instant message. That's 979-0919-877-WNRN-ROCKS or WNRN-STUDIO. Talk about families for a minute. Is the more likely relationship conversation that you have about the mother-daughter? Because the husband-wife seems to falls into the intimate conversation, mm-hmm. unless, of course, they're coming to talk about their kids. Is there a larger percentage conversation?
I'm not sure if I know what you're asking, but if you're saying, is it more mother-daughter than father-something?
Yes.
I would say no. I think it's parenting in general. I think that there's a lot of difficulty sometimes with looking at what's going to make sense, especially as children transition into being teenagers. That can be a really, really tough time for some parents, depending on what's going on with their teen. And, you know, I think, fortunately, in my experience, it's both parents who have expressed concern at different times.
One thing that I think bears on this, again, has to do with the amount of tension that the family is carrying. Sometimes the tension is between the parents, and the kids are acting that out. It's hard to say where the stuff squirts out. For instance, if parents are fighting, sometimes kids are having trouble at school because they don't feel safe at home, and they act that out at school. I think that as far as cooperation is concerned, again, it has a lot to do with how well people in the family are connected. I think of the difference between grandma's rule and wicked stepmother's rule. And they kind of show the difference in this tension. Here's grandma's rule. Johnny, as soon as you finish your spinach, then we can have dessert. All right. Maybe Johnny doesn't like spinach much, but he likes grandma, and he likes grandma's dessert, so he'll choke down some spinach. Now, here's Wicked Stepmother's rule when the tension is high. You don't eat your spinach, you little brat. You're not getting any dessert. All right, what's going to happen now? You know, kid's got to, you know, feed it to the dog, slide it under the rug, pretend to swallow, and then, you know, stuff it under the napkin or something. He's not going to want to cooperate. He'll just sit there and stonewall. So when we're connected as a family or as individuals, we tend to want to help each other out and work smoothly and cooperate because it feels good. When we're angry or have this tension between us, we tend to get oppositional and not want to cooperate.
How about what I think many would consider more of a modern day concern, or I want to know the difference in family issues with the adult child moving back home or the adult parents moving in with their kids, their adult kids. Kari, you want to jump in and talk about one of those?
Well, actually, the common thread in that is that you're now moving adult and child into adult relationships, whether it's somebody who's an adult and their parents are coming in. They now have to be in a very family situation, but adult-adult. And same if it's an adult child with moving into their parents' home. And so you're looking for a sense of how do we renegotiate what those boundaries are appropriately, excuse me, based on that everybody's an adult and looking for appropriate space, which can be difficult. You know, looking at physical space, where do people live? What space do they have that they can call their own? And then what responsibilities do they have, particularly with the, I'll separate it out a little, but is there going to be a financial rent for who's coming in? These can be difficult, or they can be negotiated by the parties fairly well if there's some similar agreements on it.
Again, I think of the relationship deal that I talked about earlier. I'll take care of you, you take care of me, we take care of each other. If you have that deal, whether it's with your parents, whether it's with your grown children, whether they have that with you, if you have that kind of even-steven back-and-forth connection, you can work out those things and come up with solutions that leave everybody feeling safe and cared for.
This is WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Thanks so much for joining us. You can also help us make WNRN a better radio station. Please go to WNRN.org and complete the WNRN listener survey. Give us your opinions about what you hear on independent music radio. Tell us what you like and what you don't. It's a quick 5-minute survey that could make a big difference. Please take the WNRN listener survey right now at WNRN.org. Back with our guest, Walter Marion, Kara Marinucci. Let's see. Two questions have come in. My father enters my home when I'm not there. I'm 32, female. I've asked him to call, but he ignores my wishes. I found him going through my bills and eating my food without asking. What do I do?
Horrors. It sounds like he doesn't have a sense of boundaries with you, and you need to establish those by changing the locks on your doors, by being clear about what you are willing to put up with and what you won't. You can complain all you want, but if he ignores that, then you're going to have to find some ways to establish your own space and your own rights.
All right. Here's another question. Caller asking for your opinion on age gaps, younger man, older woman.
The deal still, I take care of you, you take care of me, we take care of each other. Realizing, of course, that depending on how wide that age gap is, down the road there may be some issues about taking care of each other. If the younger person is in their 50s and the older person is in their 80s, that's a big deal.
And Kara, how do you, should you need to worry about any conversation outside of the relationship in such a relationship with an age gap like that?
I think that's one of the most common challenges a couple like that would face, whether it's the younger person is the male, the female, or even if it's a same-sex relationship, that you're looking at the perceptions that others have about what that relationship is about. And often we do tend to look at it being more common if a male is older and a female is a little bit younger. We tend to have in our culture a way of making that seem a little bit more okay. But we, you know, I think that could become a conflict for the couple. And there are time periods, you know, you can think of somebody in their late 20s meeting somebody in their 40s and seeming very much like they're in the same sphere of what's going on in their life because their energy levels are all the same. But like Walter talked about, looking forward into the future, is that a commitment they're worth, you know, that they want to make, knowing that there's going to be more relevance of that age gap as they move forward?
I think regardless of the relationship, intimate, family, gender, age, at what point do you, or how do you determine what concerns, what problems you might be having are actual problems that need discussion, and which are problems that you're, that really, if you wait until tomorrow, it's going to go away. It just happens to be your mood at the time.
Probably be a good idea to wait till tomorrow and see. If something sits there and comes back and nags you again and again, you ought to address it. You know, that's a pretty good hint that this is impacting you in some way that's more than just a passing mood.
All right, does that work if at the time it might seem that the person I want to talk to, that you seem to be the most open to having this conversation? The reason that I didn't bring it up 6 months ago when something, you know, put me in that kind of mood, triggered, and I didn't because I thought, tomorrow it's not going to be an issue. And it wasn't an issue tomorrow. But 6 months later, something similar happened, and and now you seem like, oh, you seem open to having this conversation. But you know what? 6 months ago, I decided it was really, you know, silly of me. Do you wait again?
Well, I think part of what you're bringing up is being able to stay in the present with what's important, knowing that you have some experience, that there might be patterns in the relationships. We often accommodate or give people room to show us whether or not that sort of behavior is going to happen again. And we do have to take responsibility for our own feelings. In other words, people don't make us feel a certain way. We have to know that certainly it might be common that if somebody does something, that a feeling will be elicited. But we can often take responsibility for how we react to it. And it might be a good time to bring it up right then. So the appropriateness of when to bring something up is a question we always have to be asking ourselves. But I would give a good guide that if you know it's important, to not wait more than 3 days.
Rick, one thing I noticed when you gave your example was I sensed a real irritation in your voice. Well, I ignored this 6 months ago, and here it is again. I can't believe it. All right, so we're talking about emotional pressure. The other person may not be feeling any pain, but you are, and you're noticing this thing's coming around. So this is turning into, you know, this is, you're carrying a load now. You're carrying this load. You're putting energy into carrying this load. If you don't talk about it, you're going to continue carrying that load. It's real nice to let the load be on the other person's shoulders, and you do that when you bring it up.
All right, just a few seconds left. Each one of you to, just to give people out there who have not visited a counselor, how do you overcome that personal concern that that's a sign of weakness? Walter, you do it for a family issue, and Cara, you do it for a more intimate partner issue.
How do you get past that? Probably your best bet is to make a phone call. You know, if you're reluctant to see somebody, just call them up. Say, hey, let me talk to you about what's going on. I'm not making a decision about anything one way or the other. I just want to talk about it a little bit.
Cara?
Well, I would say you can see it as you're consulting with somebody. You know, when we have problems with other areas of our life, whether it's something in our home or something in our work, we often go to somebody and get some consultation. We ask for more information. We ask for guidance. We ask to have a conversation with somebody that can give us a different perspective. And that's what counseling is.
All right. Thanks to both of you for coming in today. Thanks to everyone with their calls and questions.
It's been a pleasure being here.
Thank you very much.
Les Temps-Perdue up next.
This is Les Temps-Perdue on WNRN.
That's what I love about these high school girls. I get older, they stay the same age.
91.9 WNRN Charlottesville.
Welcome to the party, pal!
On 89.9 WNRS FM, Sweetbriar, Amherst, Lynchburg.
This is Les Temps-Perdue.